Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Quite good, actually. It's a really nice day in the whole of England, well, the whole of the UK, really. It's the sun's out, which is good, always good. There's cricket going on as well, county cricket going on. So it's a shame that, unfortunately, nobody can obviously be there. And there is a game at Old Trafford, Lancs playing Derby in a friendly, but it would have been good to obviously get down and watch that. But yeah, it's kind of like rubbing it into people's faces a bit because, you know, nobody can go and it's such a nice day, but it is what it is. But yeah, it's all right.
Well, it's better than not having any cricket on, isn't
true,
it, I suppose?
Yeah. True, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I get where you're coming from. Like, we're playing Nottinghamshire today. I mean, Danny Briggs got caught and bowled of Ben Duckett not long ago. So obviously, I'm still
that's
happy
at home,
that.
But not at Edgbaston, right?
No, that is at Edgbaston today. And then we have
game. Oh, that's another game.
We have another game going on at Portland Road. So we've kind of got a split squad, basically. So Kelly, for example, is keeping today at Edgbaston.
Right. That's what Yorkshire did as well.
Yeah, it's confusing, but yeah, it should make sense if you've been watching the two games. But Joe, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, mate, obviously. Yes, and it is a lovely day here in England. I must admit, it's absolutely gorgeous. But that's enough about the weather here in the UK being nice for once, because we are also joined by a special guest here on today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to today's guest, Ireland and former Warwickshire seamer, Mark Adair. So, Mark, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Hi, guys. It's been good. Training this morning. Unfortunately, not quite ready to go outside yet over in Northern Ireland, but next couple of weeks, I'm sure we'll be out and at it.
Yeah, fingers crossed, of course. And have you been doing a lot of training recently? I know you've been training today, for example, but what's the training schedule been like for the past few weeks?
Well, I've been away for 9 weeks so far this year. We were in Abu Dhabi at the start of the year, and then we had a Wolves trip, which is Ireland Day, to Bangladesh. Sort of had back-to-back 4.5 week trips, and now finally nice to spend a bit of time at home.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, always nice to get back.
Yeah. Not bad though, to be fair, in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, I know. But were they weird? Because obviously, behind closed doors, in particular the one in the UAE. How strange is that for you, playing behind closed doors?
It's nothing. We're sort of used to it by now. It's obviously different whenever we played against England, and you're in Southampton, and there's the only noises come from the groundsman shed, who actually got into the game and there started cheering, and a few wickets are falling. But apart from that, look, we're used to it by now. I think it would probably impact the England India game, where you're going from having crowds to having no crowds. I'm sure that would be a bit daunting in a stadium like that. But no, it's okay. Like, the bubble life's not too bad. I can understand the rotation sort of side of things, but because it can just get quite just boring and quite tedious, but you'll get used to it, I'm sure, and hopefully it's not too long left on it.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think we're all keeping our fingers crossed for that, aren't we? The return of
definitely.
Fans. 100%. Joe, we keep on mentioning it's been absolutely, well, it's been over a year for me and for yourself, mate. It's been far too long, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a while, to be fair. We'll be good to get back to Old Trafford. And there's actually been a weird thing that's happened this week. So obviously, Lancs were meant to play Sussex on the first game of the season at Hove. You probably have heard about this. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have, Mark, but the game, the reverse of them, we hosted Sussex 2 weeks later, but the game has been swapped around because Sussex have had a bug infestation at Hove. So that's like one less chance of getting to go to Old Trafford now.
Oh,
a bit earlier, which is a shame, but yeah, it's just pretty random thing. That's got to be a county first, surely. Fixtures being swapped because of a bug infestation. I don't reckon that's happened much. Just a little thing there.
No, fair enough. And it was very strange, I must admit. But of course, I think they are going to sort that out come the actual season. But yeah, that's enough about what's been going on down at Sussex. Because Mark, of course, we do have to talk about your cricketing journey today. And I suppose the best place to start is right at the origin, in the earliest days of the Mark Adair cricketing journey. So what's your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
I don't know. I started playing when I was 9. What was that, 2005? And it was the 2005 Ashes. Like, I started my dad he played cricket. I had an older brother who's 2 years older than me, and he started playing cricket when he was 11. And dad started he sort of restarted the youth section down at Hollywood, where we played. And yeah, it was sort of getting into that. Like, it was an under 11s team, and me being an annoying little 9-year-old was like, hold on here, I'm not letting you guys go out of the house and down on a Thursday evening or Tuesday evening or whatever it was, like, bring me with you. And then I ended up catching on, loving the game, and getting stuck into the 2005 Ashes.
Well, that is a lovely journey into cricket. It really is. It's always nice here on the podcast when you hear guests talk about family in particular and that route into the game. And you mentioned the 2005 Ashes. We always bring it up here on TCCP. What was your standout moment from the 2005 Ashes? What's the real highlight from that series for you, Mark?
I don't really know. I just remember there would be times I'd be running in trying to bowl like Simon Jones. I would watch him bowl and I would try and copy his action as close as I could. I never got anywhere near it. But there was actually a couple of games I reckon I played when I was maybe 9 or 10 where all I was thinking about was trying to channel my inner Simon Jones. So he was definitely my favourite bowler out of that. And he was class to watch. Even when I look back at it now, bowler.
Definitely not a bad bowler to idolise. And I think there's always one particular thing dismissal with Simon Jones. One particular dismissal, you probably know it as well. Exactly what I'm thinking of both of you, and that is that of Michael Clarke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just the noise. Like, you see it on Twitter all the time, like, when it says, like, you can hear pitches, and then that's the picture that comes up, and you can hear the noise. It's class. But I guess I do have to ask, Mark, obviously, being an Irishman, where did your loyalties lie in the 2005 Ashes? Was it neutral, or did you kind of want England to win, or Australia?
I don't know. I love Damian Martin. I thought he was class. Love Matthew Hayden as well. Like, there's a lot of guys on both sides. Obviously Shane Warne and stuff like that. But it was probably towards England. I didn't quite have the passion towards one side or another.
Fair enough.
Which probably added to it, to be fair, because every time I saw a brilliant bit of cricket, I loved it rather than me seeing someone getting skittled and being disappointed or the other way around. I loved watching it. I think my brother and I would have watched it over the summer holidays or whatever, and we were glued to it.
Yeah, absolutely no surprises there. What a series. It is one of the most iconic, not just Ashes series, but Test series in recent memory, really. It's just one of those series which we'll always bring up every single time, pretty much every single podcast as well, Joe, isn't it, when we get guests on?
Yeah, it feels like it, yeah.
Yeah, in the mid to early 20s. But Mark, in those early days, who'd you say were your real cricketing role models? Because we mentioned some masses names there from that 2005 Ashes series, but did you have any kind of role models or icons, per se, that you tried to emulate in those early days?
Not too much for their sort of cricketing prowess as such, but because I liked the way they did things, or I thought they were cool, and I loved the way Simon Jones could reverse swing the ball, or I liked the way Andrew Flintoff celebrated, or it was nothing. I wasn't looking at 9 years old. I wasn't thinking about, oh well, I wonder how he can get the ball to swing away from a left hander, or I wonder how he can try and clip one off his legs through mid-wicket. I was just enjoying watching it all. And it's probably only till I got a little bit older and started seeing guys like Jack Callis and stuff, the way they went about it. And he was just always involved, and whether he was catching and slip or whether he was scoring hundreds or taking wickets, it was sort of just, he was the sort of guy that I was like, this guy is unbelievable. Like, he's the first guy which I remember thinking, this guy is the bee's knees. And I reckon I would have been about 14 maybe when I started thinking about, like, rather than trying to be like guys because I like the way they bowled, I wanted to be like Jack Callis because he was Jack Callis.
I mean, another great choice. Just the third leading run scorer of all time in Test match cricket. I mean, not the worst of shouts either. And he really was a three-dimensional cricketer in every single sense of the term. Brilliant batsman, gun bowler, and fielding in the slips. Oh, absolutely brilliant.
He had
bucket hands, didn't he?
Yeah.
Absolute great bucket player. Hands. Brilliant player. Yeah. I miss watching Callis, I'm going to be honest. For those who know outside of county cricket, massive RCB fan in the IPL, he was an absolute machine for the men in red. Oh, I miss watching Jack Callis.
Yeah, definitely. And who knows, maybe Ben Stokes can maybe not hit those heights, because that was maybe yeah, just incredible by Callis.
Borderline freakish slash
definitely,
superhuman.
Yeah, but hopefully Callis. for England fans, Ben Stokes can, and the neutrals as well, Ben Stokes can get to that kind of level, kind of push that those boundaries because, yeah, I mean, he showed that the other day with his innings in the second ODI.
99 from 52.
What a player.
What an innings.
Yeah, definitely. But speaking of Ben Stokes, I guess that kind of leads into county cricket a bit. So let's take a little look then, Mark, at your kind of county career. So what are some of your earliest memories of county cricket?
I remember coming over as a 15-year-old, I think, for a trial with Warwickshire, and Gary Stair was the academy director at the time. And I came over on a Saturday morning, and the academy had a session on the Sunday and the EPP had a session on the Saturday. I went to both those sessions and sort of joined in and enjoyed myself. And pretty much at the end of that, Gary sort of said to me, he's like, yeah, look, we'd be interested in having you in our academy. Would you like to come? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, not really knowing what was sort of to come from it, or not really planning. I just thought, this is class. What great facility. What a great stadium. Actually didn't know that Edgbaston was in Birmingham until I was getting on a flight. And I was like, hold on. I thought Edgbaston was down in London somewhere, just from growing up watching cricket. And I was like, oh, everything happens in London. But little did I know that Edgbaston is actually the real home of cricket.
Yes, spot on.
Yeah.
Wrong.
And, I went there. But no, I enjoyed every minute, especially sort of you grow up throughout playing underage stuff and then you get thrust in this. I think I've made my second team debut at 16 or 17. And you're playing with guys who you've seen on TV and you're trying to play it cool. You're trying to sort of not really think, oh, gee, like one of the games, I think I played with Wilkesy early doors. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I've literally watched this guy play for the last couple of years and now we're sharing a new ball on a green one in Durham.
Always helps.
But yeah, look, it was amazing. Great experience. And I think it was just the fact that you were constantly around professionalism and you were constantly around professional facilities and professional coaches that just sort of enabled you to dig in and just get better and better.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, obviously, six more years as a Warwickshire fan. And I suppose I have to just touch upon that point there about you not knowing that Edgbaston was in Birmingham. As someone who lives very, very close to the second city, what was your first ever impression of the city of Birmingham?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I didn't really know what to expect. I think I got a taxi. Well, my dad was with me and I got a taxi and stayed at the hotel. I'm trying to remember what it was called. But it was in Digbeth, I think. I can't remember what it was called. But anyway, so we took a bit of a walk, walked down to the Bullring. And I was like, this is massive, this class. So I loved it. I'd spent a bit of time in South Africa. I'd spent a bit of time in London and stuff because my old man would have traveled it. And I was impressed by it. Only then when I sort of moved, I finished my GCSEs. And the day after I finished my GCSEs, I would fly over to Birmingham and I would be living in Harborne. It was really when I sort of moved over, when I started spending like months at a time. I would spend the summer there and spend a lot of time and properly immerse myself in the place. So I sort of learned to love it. I think it's, to me, I've still got some of my best friends in the world over there. They're not all cricketers. I would have played club cricket down at Harborne or played at Moseley, and there's still guys there, which I'd speak to every other day at least. And they'll be friends for life. So Birmingham is a place which I have very high regard for. It's got a special little place in my heart.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. It really is. In comparison to Darren Maddy, I mean, for those who've listened to the Darren Maddy podcast, do go and give that a listen. But he said when he was moving to Birmingham with his wife, they said, no, we're not living here. They moved to Solihull, which was quite funny. But yeah, Harborne.
I was blessed, to be fair. Yeah, I was in Harborne and I was in Solihull. So I wasn't living too central. I was very blessed to be living in two lovely areas.
Oh, yeah. Harborne in particular. Harborne, for those who don't know, was the stomping grounds of Alan Donald. He actually lived in Harborne when he played for the Bears in the 90s. Yeah. But yeah,
I have no clue what you're talking about here.
Again, this will be for those outside of Birmingham. Yeah, this I didn't actually realise, Joe. To be fair,
this is nothing to me.
Yeah, this is very Birmingham orientated. This bit of the podcast. So
this means nothing to me. So yeah, I'll be honest. I'm very lost.
Where's Harbour, Joe?
But I assume now somewhere in Birmingham or somewhere around there. But I couldn't have told
you about that. About 10 minutes away from Edgbaston.
Hmm. I could not have told you that an hour ago. So there you go.
The Harbour Mile, is a very famous thing.
Again, I did not know that.
There's a mile of pubs up and down Harbourne High Street, which is a lovely thing to do on a Saturday afternoon.
I can imagine.
Apparently.
You've been told. But moving the conversation back onto Warwickshire County Cricket Club then. Of course, we have strayed into Birmingham. We aren't the Birmingham podcast, unfortunately, although, Joe, we could do that in the future.
I'll pass on that, thanks. You have me a bit lost.
Cheeky. But Mark, what were your first ever impressions of Warwickshire County Cricket Club? You mentioned actually going there when you were young, 15, 16. You go to Edgbaston. You yourself called it the home of cricket. I mean, I'd agree with that personally as a Bears fan. But what was your impression or first impressions of the club as a whole? What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was great. Like whenever I first arrived there, they just won the championship there. They were winning, they won all three trophies while I was sort of either on the academy or on the staff. And that was amazing. Like, it was amazing to watch these guys who, like, I talk about some of the people now, but like, you look at the team at the time and there was Trotty there, opening the baton was Westwood, who's now a coach. You then had, I don't know, who's at number four? You would have had Madsen. But then you have like Keith Barker, Ricky Clark, Chris Wright, Boydie would have been playing, Jeetan Patel was there. Like, there was a lot of guys who were just, they were big names. And even like Laurie Evans was there, Varun Chopper was there. Yeah, like it was a team that at that time I do think was the best team in the country. And they proved it across all three formats. I think we looked at a graphic when I was there, and over a 10-year period or something, they had more trophy wins across three formats than any other county. I'm looking at you laughing here because you're sort of, there's clearly a little bit of the old Warwickshire-Lancashire rivalry on here.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, I can't talk about Lancashire because I played against them once in a T20 game, and I also played at Old Trafford in a second team game, and Liam Livingston hit me onto the point. So we were playing in the middle. And
there's the smile
over in the corner.
That is serious. I've only seen one person do that. And that was Johnny.
He tracked me and EA hit it. And I think it's to the day the biggest six I've ever been hit for.
Jeez. Just again, testament to Liam Livingston's power, isn't it? And of course, made his England ODI debut the other day. So yeah, Liam Livingston, obviously a quality player. But Mark, what do you remember from your Bears debut in particular? I mean, in terms of T20, we'll start with, and then obviously a very, very memorable championship debut. But what do you remember from your T20 debut? Because it was a Bears versus Pears match at the Ford.
Yeah, on Sky. Mm. I didn't think I was playing. I got called into the squad because Wilkesy was unavailable, and I was like, I'm just here as cover. I wasn't thinking I was playing. I actually trained with the second team at 9:30 that morning, and because I was just thinking I wasn't going to play. And then, so you go in for food at around 4. I think the game started at 6 or something like that. I don't know. But you go in for food around 4, warm your on deck at 5. And somewhere between that, Dougie sort of came up to him and was like, yeah, you're going to play and you're going to bat 8. And I was like, right, okay.
No pressure.
Yeah. We bat first. I think Belly scored runs. Mm-hmm. And at the time, so Sam Hain, we would have been close, and he had only played one or two games as well. So it sort of was nice for me to sort of play rather than watching him play. It was nice to play with him. We batted first. I got stitched up with a run out from Ati Javid. I got one off two balls, and then the bowling came along. But it was just the fact it was, I think there was like 15 or 16,000 in local derby Friday night, and it was class. It was amazing. It was a great atmosphere. You know, you're playing on Sky, and you got your family back home watching, and sort of some of your mates are then like, oh, Mark plays for Warwickshire. I'll look at that on Sky. And next thing you know, they're like, hold on, he's playing as well. That's great. But yeah, and then you bowl straight half volley and hit it straight to cover, and that's your first ball. So it's nice enough. But yeah, like it was a class experience. I loved the blast. I think it's a great competition. But yeah, I think that's probably the best thing I could give you.
Well, no, fair enough. Do you remember who you dismissed, though? Because this is a batsman who, I'm going to be honest, gives me nightmares every single season, no matter if he's playing for Worcestershire. Now, of course, plays for Yorkshire, scores runs for fun against Warwickshire every single time. Do you remember who it was?
Yeah, Tom Cole-Cadmore.
Yeah.
Called Ian Bell, short cover.
Not a bad player to get out. Not a bad player at all. So,
he scored 100 the week before. I remember watching the build-up and stuff. Like in the dressing room before, and you sort of see all the highlights of him on the ground against Durham, and then he then hits a straight half volley, straight extra cover.
That was his so fastest 100, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure.
Something like that, yeah.
He broke a record or something. I can't remember. He broke some kind of record, I'm pretty sure. In that game.
Yeah,
so.
He whacks it. He's a good player.
Yeah, definitely does.
Sure does now to whack it. He's an incredible player. But Mark, how would you actually describe the rivalry? Because for those who don't know, Bears versus Pears, Warwickshire versus Worcestershire, local rivalry, it is the one that we all mark on the calendar here in the Midlands. Okay, it is the Midlands clash. As soon as the fixture list comes out, it's the first one on. As soon as the tickets go live on the Edgbaston website, everything sells out. Okay, we have early bird tickets, which sell out within like the space of 5 days. What did you make
of the fourth biggest county rivalry?
But it's the biggest in the Midlands.
Well, yeah. But
and
I'm just saying,
to be honest, every single time,
it is a great game.
Oh, it's brilliant. Although we have been on the wrong side of results in the past 5 years, to be honest, at Edgbaston. But in terms of the occasion, it's massive. As you said, I mean, in 2019, for example, we had nearly 20,000 in. I mean, really? It really is an incredible, incredible game. What did you make of it from a player's perspective? How big of an occasion, how big of a rivalry was it for you actually experiencing that as a player?
See, whenever I played, I didn't really think too much about it because it was... I was more nervous because of my first game. I think the guys that lived in Birmingham or from the sort of surrounding area would mean a lot more to them because they've grown up with it. Obviously it's big and you play against these guys a lot, whether that's club cricket in the Birmingham League or whether that's second in cricket, or I think it is the kind we play the most. 40 minutes down the road. It is a game where you're thinking, there's a bit of bragging rights. You don't really know. You get into the old affluent areas of Barnt Green and they're sort of split somewhere down the middle. Yep. And there's guys who went to school, like Matt Lamb, for example, went to Bromsgrove School. And so he would have been going to school with guys who were playing for Worcester and he was playing for Warwickshire. And as a child, if you didn't get into Warwickshire, you almost went to Worcester. Warwickshire would like to look down on, they would like to look down on Worcester, but then at the same time, Worcester are like fueled by that, and they are like, it's definitely big. Back in the day, I would say it was a bit more spicy and a bit more heated, but I think the lads have grown to know each other a bit better, and I don't think that spice is quite as intense as it was.
I mean, to be fair, it is a very friendly rivalry. I must admit, I always liken it to the big brother and the little brother. Okay, you always want them around, but you can't allow the little brother to have the bragging rights.
Worcester.
You just can't. Well, not poor Worcester at all. When you look at the history, when you look at Edgbaston as well, okay, it's a shining crown jewel in English cricket. It really is. Okay, it's the home of finals day. Well, it's England's fortress. Okay. We are the big boys in the Midlands. It's as simple as that. And Worcester love getting one over on us. And to be fair to the Rapids, they've done exactly that in the past 5 years. So that's something that we do need to work upon. 2021, Mark Robinson and the boys, if you're listening. We could do with some wins down at New Road and Edgbaston, respectively, this season. But yet it is exactly like that. And to be fair, for all of the rivalry and all the banter, it wouldn't be the same without them. It really wouldn't, because we all love the game. We all love the Bears versus Pears game, no matter what the result is. Of course, you want to win, but it's just, it's brilliant. It's special. It's a very, very special game. That's all I can describe it as a Warwickshire fan. And fingers crossed, of course, we can retain the Norman Gifford Trophy in 2021. But Mark, I suppose we have to talk away from T20 cricket and move on to a very, very special county championship debut. Now, I'm going to allow you to actually explain this in your own words. But first of all, how did you find out about your county championship debut? What's going through your head on that day?
I think I told the day before by Doug. Doug just sort of said, look, it's the last game of the year. We're going to give you a go. Good luck with us. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy the occasion. And, you know, I was lucky because I think Bally was available. He was released from injury. So he had come back. And this is like prime Ian Bell. This is Ian Bell while he's still playing for England. And you're still a little bit starstruck, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's Taunton. I'd never been to Taunton before. Didn't know what to expect. And yeah, look, it was class. It was bittersweet because it was the day I found out I broke down in the second innings. I had my first stress fracture in my back in the second innings. So I had bowled 630 overs something that year, that season. Whether that's club cricket, whether I was second team cricket, and I managed to stay fit. And it was literally the last innings of the year that my back decides to give away, and that sort of gave me a bit of jip for the next couple of years. But yeah, it was an amazing day, and it is that thing where you only make your debut once, and you know you get your first wicket, and it's great. All the pats in the back, and you're thinking about how great it is rather than thinking about what's next. Debuts are all, they're weird things because you never make one of them, and at the same time, it's a special day because you want to make an impact, you want to get involved. But yeah, like it's class. Anyone who's done it, it's a real delight.
Yeah, I can imagine. Must be absolutely brilliant. And you alluded there to your first wicket. I don't think we can simply brush over that wicket, because talking of the 2005 Ashes right at the beginning of the podcast, the man who you got out for your first ever championship wicket was Glenn McGrath's 500. It was Marcus Truscothick. I mean, how big of an occasion was that? You've got out one of England's greatest ever openers as your maiden championship wicket. I mean, what's going through your head at that moment?
He was on 80, so he'd been putting me on the ground for six
for quite a while.
Previous, so, yeah, so I wasn't too bothered about who it was. I was just delighted it happened. He had a lot of play and misses, and you're sort of thinking, like, this is never going to happen. And then you finally bowl a white swing, and he throws the kitchen sink at it, and he nicks it. Yeah, it's great. Like, obviously, I think people have made more of a deal of it, like, as time went on than what it was at the time. Like, obviously, he's a class player, or was a class player. Oh, he probably still is.
Will be better than us two, at least. Yeah.
And, I grew up watching him. I think there was my first ever, like, cricket match as a fan, was Ireland-England. And, I got a photo of him. Oh, he was standing, he was fielding it, deep cover or something, or deep backward square. And I remember tapping him on the shoulder and getting him to sign an autograph. But did he wear 45 for England? I think he wore 45 because I just remember the old retro Vodafone.
Like the circle.
T-shirt, but it was just Gothic 45 on the back.
Yeah.
I just remember I was sitting behind him. Yeah, it's sort of moments like that which make you appreciate the fact that you're then, he's involved in your sort of cricketing journey as such.
Yeah, that must be pretty strange to have had that, obviously, that earlier memory of meeting him on a boundary, having his autograph, and then a few years later, you're getting him out. I mean, that must be really, really strange. Joe, I have to ask you this. Who do you say has been your real highlight of meeting on the boundary? Because I used to do this a lot of cricket. And I remember in particular one funny one being Keswick Williams. 2017 West Indies seamer.
He's a rocket.
He's a good bowler. Obviously you've met him a few times, haven't you, against Ireland?
Yeah, played against prop times. He's a rocket of an individual. But yeah,
I don't even know like
Bairstow.
Yeah, but I didn't meet him on the you just mean in general on the boundary.
We'll change it to in general.
Okay, well that's why I was thinking I have no idea on the boundary. As in the best person, I mean, yeah, that was pretty good when obviously met Johnny Bairstow in 2015. That was pretty good. Yeah, I'd probably say that's, and maybe when I met Butler as well, kind of like 2016. Probably say those two were the two for me. Yeah, around that kind of time was when I'll say that kind of era of that kind of England team, those two were kind of like young coming through. Mm-hmm. And obviously, yeah, then you had like Anderson Broad, who was still fairly experienced still. Like that kind of era was a good time to meet players, I think. So, yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously, two massive names, two World Cup winners now, as of 2019 in that incredible Lord's final. Yeah, of course. And talking of almost meeting players, Mark, I did just want to ask you a question. Did you ever play in the Neil Abberley Memorial Trophy? For those who don't know, this is a charity game, and it is wonderful. It's at Station Road in Knowle. It's a fantastic game. What were your experiences like in that? Because we haven't really touched upon that with many Bears players. But how did you find that Memorial Trophy game?
Yeah, it's a great day. Like I think you sort of play. Jilo actually got me out. Like it's a bit of a jolly up for some of the lads, and I think the older guys take it more seriously than the guys playing. And you know, you never lose your competitive spirit, I guess. And it's funny seeing guys who used to be so good, who have sort of forgotten that they're not still so good, and you see guys running in. And it's also funny to see guys who you are completely underestimating whenever you're going out to play there. And next thing you know, they've got you in knots. And there's a 45 to 50 year old guy who is making you look like an idiot while playing. But you know, it's good because you get all the loads of kids go, all the wives and girlfriends are there. And it sort of seems to be, it's a really good club day. And sort of a nice day to be around.
Absolutely. And it is for a great cause. It is all for charity at the end of the day. It's a very, very nice thing that Warwickshire do every single year. Of course, unfortunately, weren't able to do that in 2020. But fingers crossed it'll be back in the future, because I remember going when I was young and I met Chris Wokes at one. And oh, my word, they do create some good memories there, because it's not like Edgbaston. Yeah. For those who don't know, probably no one knows what I'm on about. Station Road. It's a lovely little ground. Knowle and Dorridge Cricket Club. They are like the Real Madrid of Warwickshire. You know, grassroots cricket. They are the ones that get all the big players in. Bell plays for them. Bresnan's playing for them this season. And it's just a lovely, lovely family day. You get the benches out. Sometimes as well, we played Wasps a couple of years ago, and Joe Launchbury absolutely launched a six outside of the ground. So yeah, I mean, obviously in the future, Warwickshire fans, if you do get an opportunity, in particular if you've got kids, take them. It's a wonderful, wonderful occasion for all Bears fans involved and players, of course.
Meeting players, like I remember Ireland England again, I was pulling the covers on at Stormont where Ireland were playing, and helping out because the groundsman at Stormont played at Holywood, and he would sort of you get in for free, you can watch the game, but you have to help me pull the covers on and all that sort of stuff. And I remember getting there's a photo of me as a 15 year old with bleach blonde at the front of my hair with my Jonathan Trott.
Oh, nice.
And then you go on to share a dressing room with a guy, and you're like, does he remember that? Does he not remember that? And then you show him a photo, and he's laughing at you, being like, what are you like? Look at the state of you.
He didn't remember it.
No. But yeah, like I've gone on, like there's photos which I've got, even with Gary Wilson, for example. I got a photo with Gary Wilson. And then you go on to play with these guys, and it's mental that how many times it's happened. Like, you see a lot with the footballers. Like, you see, like, oh, Steven Gerrard posing with Trent Alexander-Arnold. Mm. Like, oh, as a ball boy or something. And then next thing you know, he's right back for Liverpool. And you're like, right, this is how it works. It's a bit mental. And you sort of, as a player, you then never forget that in 10 years' time, some kid who asked me for a photo could be playing for Ireland, could be put me out of a job, could be the next big thing, and it's just sort of cool to see. But anyway, sorry, yeah, back to you.
Mark, I'm glad. I'm really glad you actually shared that story. It's a wonderful story. And obviously, Trotty, club legend. Oh, I miss Jonathan Trott. I was there for his final game, Kent 2018, Division 2, lifting the trophy. One of the most bittersweet games in my existence as a cricket fan, because obviously got promoted, went up to Division 1, but we lost Barks, we lost Wright, we lost Trotty. Oh, real, real bittersweet game, to say the least. But it is nice. It is nice to really hear that story. The fact that you're there meeting Trotting in the next, well, say the next year, a few years later, playing with him at Warwickshire. Incredible story that. But moving back onto your Warwickshire journey then, Mark, what do you say was your proudest moment? I'm guessing that obviously making your debut, that was massive, playing in Bears versus Pears matches. But is there one real standout highlight for you from your time at Warwickshire that you look back on really fondly, per se?
Probably not on the field, you know. Like, I didn't have a great run at it on the field. Like, I had three stress fractures in 3 years, all in the same place, and I finished with surgery. So I guess on the field is pretty disappointing. But like, just being around the guys and being involved in a real, like, they're a team ethic club. And they want to try and drive the one team, one dream sort of thing throughout the entire, but even throughout the entire organization. Like Neil Snowball, the chief executive at the time, he was trying to get players to walk through the office to the changing rooms in the morning so that they would get more familiar with the guys working in the office and the guy that he's working in the office, so that there was more of an office staff and playing staff sort of mix, and so they would get to know each other. And I think Gilo moved his office into the actual Edgbaston office rather than in the players area, because he wanted to spend more time around these guys and make the club closer to being like a real club feel to it. And I think that sort of sums it up, and it's a great place to play, and the lads are all great there. But that's probably a weird one for you, but no real individual highlights, but yeah, a couple of great days.
Well, that is nice to hear. I have to be honest, and I know it does seem as though we're pining about Warwickshire County Cricket Club, but it is a wonderful club. It's as simple as that. I mean, I went first in 2009, and it is just that. It's a big club, but there is also that family element with the members, yeah, with the players as well. We've had some class players over the years, some very nice players as well, I must admit, down at Edgbaston. And it is just a special place. It's as simple as that. And something for those who aren't Warwickshire fans, we have a motto: once a Bear, always a Bear. And I think with Warwickshire County Cricket Club, that statement really does ring true. It doesn't matter if you're Ian Bell, it doesn't matter if you're Jonathan Trott, Chris Wokes, Jeetan Patel, one of the absolute legends of our club, or even someone who's just played a game. I mean, someone down at Edgbaston, who is very, very funny to even hear his name, is Andy Umead. I mean, he barely played.
What a bloke.
Oh yeah, what a bloke, and what an innings that was against Lancs in 2017.
We lived together.
Did you?
Yeah, he's a good lad. He got a lot of chirp that game against Lancs. Jimmy Anderson was giving him some grief while he was at the non-strikers end.
I'm not surprised.
He was at the non-strikers end and he would bowl the ball and turn around and then give Andy some grief.
We need to get Andy on the pod to talk about that. That was such a funny innings.
That one. It was gutsy, and it was exactly what the club needed at the time, what the team needed. I think he was, I didn't really see a lot about his sort of last couple of years. But while I was there, he just looked to be a real quality player.
Well, he was very resolute. That's how I'd describe Andy Umead. And that innings, for those who don't know, the second slowest century in county championship history in terms of minutes. It took him, I think it was like nearly 400 minutes to reach his century, and he had a strike rate of 28. Trench warfare doesn't even cover it. I mean, it's absolutely incredible, the resilience, the mental fortitude of that Andy Umead innings. Oh, legendary. Absolute cult hero down Edgbaston for that knock, Andy Umead. What a ledge. But Mark, obviously going back onto your cricketing journey with Warwickshire, before we talk about the tough moments, I just wanted to ask you quite a profound question, actually. What do you miss most about Edgbaston? What do you miss most about the club, per se? Is there anything in particular that you kind of look back on and think, oh, I kind of miss that?
Just the lads, really. It's probably a new crop now. But no, you don't really appreciate all the, like, the change. Have you ever been in the change rooms or anything like that?
I haven't.
Or have you seen? No, they're incredible.
I've seen them, because there's a tour video. I think
they're the best change rooms in world cricket. Certainly the home dressing room is probably the best change room I've ever been in. Like, when it comes to size, when it comes, you get your lockers, you then go into, like, the players viewing area, you then go in, there's a couple of offices in there, you then walk into the gym. Mm-hmm. Like, it's huge. I think Old Trafford's similar.
Old Trafford's got good, like, really, really good change rooms. Home and away are really, really good. Been in both of them, yeah, really.
The away really ones good. Are all right.
Yeah.
No, like, I think it's just sort of being around that sort of facility all the time, and you sort of, you might take a bit for granted about how good it is and how, like, even the groundsmen and stuff, they are incredibly good at what they do. So yeah, like, it's you're a lucky man if you get to play there all the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Really, really are.
Yeah, definitely. But I guess kind of, Aaron just mentioned it then, a little bit of a different path now in terms of county talk. Let's talk maybe about some tougher moments, Mark. So what would you say your toughest moment has or was with Warwickshire?
Probably the second stressy. I would say because I worked too hard to come back from the first one. And this was a stage where I'd done all the graft. I came back in May and then I got picked in the T20 team, the first team. I was sort of trying to break in and I started doing quite well and, you know, was finally starting to find my feet and sort of make a bit of an impact. And then halfway through the first set of group games, I even get called up to the Ireland team for the first time, 2015 against Afghanistan. And then you sort of, you're still complaining, you get a jab in your back and you're still complaining about it. You go and get scanned and they say, look, there's another stress fracture there. And that's you out for the rest of the year. You know, you come back in May and you're down in end of June, start of July. And you're sort of just thinking all that hard work was for nothing. Then obviously you come back the next year, you come back in May and you go down in June again. And it sort of just, it puts a real damper on things, but at the same, it was, I had a few fallouts with the physio, Gerhard Mostert, what a bloke. And he really wants the best for his players and just wants to see the players as little as possible because then he's doing his job. But whenever you have to spend a lot of time with him and he's very old fashioned in his ways that it's hard work. You know, dealing with him, it's hard work getting everything strong again. And, you know, he put a lot of time and effort into me and you sort of feel as if you're letting guys down a bit because you're continually getting injured. And then every time you come out of one, you've got that in your back of your head that you're never really far away from the next one. Which is obviously disappointing, but then that sort of put an end to my work career. But yeah, county cricket can be a tough ground whenever you're either not playing or you're sort of close to playing. And next thing you know, you're going in the squad, you don't know if you're going to play or not. And then next thing you know, you're carrying drinks for 4 days. And it can be tough. And there's a lot of guys who have made it and there's a lot of guys who haven't. But it is that sort of thing. It can be good and it can be bad and it can be a mixture of both.
100%. I mean, if you look at statistically wise, I'm talking now, county cricket careers on average usually last between 2 and 3 years, which is absolutely nothing. And it does just show it is a pretty cutthroat environment. And if you can make it, it's an incredible achievement. It really is to spend like a decade or so in county cricket. But Mark, in terms of those injuries, of course, you've had multiple injuries over the course of your cricketing journey, those stress fractures, of course, being a real major one. But what do you say motivated you to carry on? What motivated you when you had those injuries to keep going to Gerhard? But what actually motivated you to carry on going through the rehab, going through the physio work? What motivated you to carry on in your cricketing journey?
Motivation, like you love playing cricket. And I think that you love doing well. And I think it is the sort of dangling the carrot of doing well and forging a proper career. Which is what makes you want to keep coming back. And I think there was times I didn't. Like there was times I'd given up in my head and I went home for a month in October and sort of said I wasn't coming back and went through a bit of a tough spell there. And I went through a tough spell a couple of times when I was away, just mentally and stuff like that. And you just sort of get so down and so you sort of beat yourself up. That you're coming back to something that you're just going to, what's the point in this? I'm just going to get injured again. And then you sort of think about like, maybe this isn't for me. And you think about your plan B and you start panicking because you still want to play. And then I think, do you remember Paul Best?
Yes.
Yeah, so he was probably the smartest man I've ever met. And the wisest man, the wisest young man I've ever met. He said to me, it was like, mate, just because it's someone else's dream doesn't mean it have to be yours. And I was like, it's absolutely okay if you don't want to be here. It's absolutely okay. And he just let me rationalize things. And, you know, I probably owe him, I probably never sort of thanked him properly for it, but he was always very good, and he walked away from cricket. You know, he was an England under 19 captain, and he was, yeah, Warwickshire's next big thing. Tied to be Warwickshire's next captain across all formats. Great left arm spinner, and stress fractures got the better of him, and he decided that he would rather be happy somewhere else. It doesn't have to be cricket. So yeah, look, it's a tough one that sort of motivates you to keep going, but as long as there is something that's motivating you, that's all that really matters.
Of course, yeah. And very, very wise words there from Paul. Has to be said. And this is the thing, isn't it, with cricket, because it is a lovely sport. I mean, for me, it is pretty much my entire world. I think that people can tell that from the podcast and the way in which I talk about this game. But there is that other side to it. It's not all the centuries, it's not all the hundreds, it's not all the great moments and the series wins and the tournament wins. There is quite a dark side to cricket at times. And in particular, the mental side does get to players a lot. So, Mark, I wanted to ask you about this. How do you bounce back from disappointment? I'm talking nowadays as well, obviously, but also in your time at Warwickshire. How do you bounce back from disappointment? Let's say you've been absolutely hammered. Let's say they've gone like none for 100, for example, just in theory, of course, not in a game. But let's say they've gone none for 100. Let's say they've got out for duck after duck after duck. How do you personally bounce back from that disappointment and carry on in your cricketing journey?
Or fumbled the ball twice in the last over against the West Indies in the Caribbean.
I remember that.
So. Something like that, yeah.
Nick, that was Barbados.
You sort of, yeah. Apparently so. I don't really remember. no, but there's obviously there's disappointments throughout everything, and there's going to be disappointments in life, whether it's whatever field you're in. I do think cricket's become easier because you've got teammates there. That if you've got a good bunch around you, then you're able to sort of they can help pick you up. It's one of those things that you never really learn unless you learn how to do it when you're a bit younger, and learn how to fail and learn how to be disappointed and how to deal with disappointment when you're younger. I think that's why all the coaches these days are talking about challenge yourself as a kid, putting yourself in positions to fail, because that's how you learn. And when at the time you're sort of just thinking, it's like, shut up, you don't know what you're all about. And now you're sort of looking back, you're like, yeah, I probably, I would still try and do that. I would still try and, when I'm training, go into positions where I know that I'm probably going to come out second best. But you do learn to pick yourself back up. And as long as you're not, provided you don't get too high and too low, I think, that's always the advice I was told. The guy that lasts 10 years in county cricket is probably the guy that stayed the most even keel on his good days and his bad days. Yeah, I think that's a sort of recipe for success, provided you don't, when the papers are all saying about how great you are, as long as you're not letting that go to your head, and whenever the members are calling for you to be sacked, as long as you don't let that get to you too much either, I think you should be fine.
I think that's a really, really good piece of advice there. I really do. And it is an interesting chat, of course, because we do that here, obviously, at the County Cricket Podcast. I think those who listen to us frequently know that it's quite chilled, it's quite laid back. But of course, we do like to go into depth in these issues in cricket as well. And you mentioned there in particular about almost the white noise. So from the media, social media, members, for example, let's say when you're not performing very well, how do you actually cope with that, Mark? How do you cope with the outside noise as a cricketer? Or does that even affect you? How do you personally go about dealing with that?
Yeah, I think it affects everyone. I think for no matter what, it'll affect you. You can say it doesn't affect you, but it's how much it affects you, I think. I think it's the ones that you go and you deal with, for example, I hadn't taken a wicket in however many games, or I'd taken two wickets in the last, I think it was the last 14 months it was described. And in my head, I was trying to be like, hold on here, there's been a pandemic, I've had ankle reconstruction surgery. But then you sort of just think to yourself, well, why are you getting annoyed with this? This guy is a reporter, it's what he does. But then you put that little bit of pressure on yourself, and it's provided that you don't then let that get the better of you, or good days are always around the corner. I think with cricket especially, as a bowler, the amount of times you get a guy who nicks a through slip, or a catch gets put down a cover, or you bowl a perfect yorker and the guy somehow digs it out, but those days come with the days that you miss your yorker, you bowl a half volley and he spoons it down the long arm, or some guy takes a class catch, or you know, it's just that sort of thing where, oh, you're bowling into the battery's out of form. It's that sort of thing. Like the ebbs and flows of cricket is a weird one. I don't think there's as many sports that would have as many and potentially be as quick to ebb and flow. Like one day, I think it's Piers Morgan's Twitter bio. It's like one day you're cock of the walk and the next day you're a feather duster. I think that's class because it's just as long as you don't think that you're the big lad whenever you're doing well, that's all that really matters, I think. And I've certainly let that, I've got ahead of myself a couple of times, and we're very lucky to have Graham Ford as a head coach who I've got a very good personal relationship with. And if he thinks I'm swanning around, he'll be the first person to let me know and he'll rein me back in. But he gives you that sort of opportunity to be confident and opportunity to do well. And I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it is. And it is maintaining that even keel. I know we speak about it here on the podcast quite frequently about the game being a roller coaster. And there is a fantastic quote from Graham Swann in The Edge. Again, something which we almost use as cricketing gospel here on the County Cricket Podcast. I mean, Joe there laughing already. But he says the game never changes. And it's true. It's spot on, but our perception of the game changes. And of course, every single game is different. But the actual game itself never changes. It's all in here. And that is what's so unique about cricket. It's a physical battle, but it's also just as much a mental battle. It's about taking, care of obviously your on-field demons, your off-field demons, suppressing that almost negativity from outside noise, whether that's media, fans, social media, for example. And that is just what makes it such an encapsulating sport. It's an incredible sport. It really is. And as I said, if you can rise to the top, I mean, Mark, for example, you're doing brilliantly for Ireland. You really are. And we'll talk about the test in a bit because I was there for that test and we have to touch upon it because that was absolutely incredible at Lords in July 2019. I was about to say last year. It wasn't last year.
Feels like it.
Yeah, it does. It feels like about 5 years ago that, I'm going to be honest, with the length of 2020 was. It's a very, very special game. And I don't think that any other sport on the planet can quite compare to cricket, in my personal opinion. Joe, feel free to disagree with that if you want to, mate.
Maybe I'm going to disagree with that, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I can't really argue with that. Cricket is such a good sport. The ups and downs, and, you know, it's just the different competitions that go on around the world. And that I've said it before on the podcast, that's what's so unique about cricket is. You can play one game in England and then go and play one game in India and it'd be completely different. Mm-hmm. As obviously the recent series between England and India has shown, and will show this summer, because
hopefully
we can't predict the result. We can't, you know, guarantee the result or anything, but yeah, hopefully it's a more positive outcome for England. So yeah, it's such a good sport, but yeah. As I say, can't really disagree with the fact that, I mean, maybe I would try and argue, but I probably would argue the football's, beats it, but yeah, I don't know. It's a hard one, isn't it? Hard one.
Football's completely different, though. Football's got that, like...
Oh, definitely, yeah.
There is 90 minutes, and at the end of it, there's usually a winner. Or at the end of 120 minutes, there's usually a winner, whereas the thing with cricket is the fact that
you can go for five days, 4 days, whatever, and not find a winner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's mental. It's 100%,
yeah. 100%.
But you can be completely down and out. And one guy can bring you back from the brink.
Ben Stokes. Like,
yeah.
Sam Curran, almost.
I guess.
Almost Sam Curran. Which, by the way, I think that innings would have been better or as good as the Stokes one at Headingley. I would just like to point that out because it was in India. Sam Curran's about 22, so he's that. Had like 8 years less experience than Stokes, and he's batting with arguably a worse player than Jack Leach in Mark Wood, because Mark Wood's never got a test match 92, which we will talk about in a minute, because we keep bringing it up. But before we do go on to that, actually, Mark, there is a couple more questions to do with county cricket, I guess, and probably a bit, probably require people, they always seem like easy questions, don't they? But actually, people require quite a lot of thinking for them, and that is
good.
Firstly, the toughest batsman who you have bowled to, who would you say it is in county cricket?
Adam Lyth for me, T20. He was in class, Nick. And if you went straight at him, he whacked you a little wicket. And if you give him any width at all, he would find a way to get a 3-point.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice cut shot, isn't he, Adam Lythe?
Yeah, he's class.
Yeah, good player. Good player.
saying that through gritted teeth as a Lancs fan.
And I guess that pretty much the reverse of that. Who is the toughest boarder that you faced? Again, is anyone that really sticks out?
I had like a hit in the head in my list of debut by Horace Villon. Like first ball, like hit me on the badge. Actually, I failed the concussion test the next day. It was meant, but I'm gonna have to say Red Bull Cricket and probably Jake Ball had me in knots. At Edgbaston, he had me in. I got a second new ball spell from him, which I didn't
last did
really long. No, he didn't. Brett Hutton bowled me a bumper and I hit it deep square.
So Brett Hutton burgled Jake Ball's wicket is what that sounds like to me.
You can take that as you will. but yeah, I would say Jake Ball. I didn't play a lot of first team kind of cricket. Like, there was a lot of guys who played second cricket who were class, but first team would have been those two, I reckon.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Jake Ball, what a player. Obviously, been on England's on the fringes of the England side again. So maybe we'll see him back in the summer. Who knows? And I guess actually one more question on Canter cricket is I'm actually surprised we've not addressed yet, and that is, was there any aside from yourself, obviously, who would you say your favourite fellow Irishman to play county cricket is? Is there anyone who really, you know, sticks out? I mean, I guess Will Porterfield must be up there. Obviously, Warwickshire as well.
And Boyd.
Yeah, there's Poy, there's Boyd. Obviously, Sterlow.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to say Boydie.
Fair enough.
His locker was next to mine in Edgbaston. And there were days whenever he was with the wind and he was blowing and it was just horrible because he was just so big and he got so much bounce. We did bouncer practice indoors at Edgbaston one day. And they have this little helmet. They have a little helmet that drops down from the top of the net. And they put it to like 6'1" or something, or 6 foot. And I think there was a 3.5 feet difference. I hit it and then Boydie hit it, and there was a 3.5 feet difference between where mine pitched and where Boyd pitched. And you're looking at that and you're like, that is absolutely disgusting. Like, imagine looking at a ball where you think it's going to hit you sort of somewhere in the midriff, and then next thing you see, it's coming at your head. Like,
I think
he was probably the bloke who had the most, he had probably the most going for him in county cricket.
Fair enough. Yeah, good shout, enough, that. Yeah. Boyd Rankin, of course, played for both England and Ireland, and that is a perfect transition to talk about that famous Lord's Test. Of course, the one which I was there for, July 2019. I'll set the scene. It's a baking hot day at Lord's, the home of cricket. It was about 30 or 31 roasting degrees. It was roasting, wasn't it, Mark?
It got up to 36 on day two.
Jeez,
I mean, melting in the field.
It was an incredible, incredible occasion, and it was an incredible test match. And just before we talk about the test match itself, before the game actually started, what was it like knowing that you're going to go up against some of your former Warwickshire teammates and, of course, play with them in William Porterfield and Boyd Rankin? But what was it like knowing the prospect of facing Chris Wokes and Moeen Ali in particular, of course, who came up through our academy ranks?
Yeah, like, it's weird. Like, I didn't really think I didn't really know if I was going to play or not. Again, that sort of age-old dilemma of being on the fringe of the squad and you don't know if you're going to play or not. And then you get told you're going to play and it's great. And you're excited. And part of me worries that I might not get, like, those couple of days, they were so far my the best days of my life on a cricket field. And I'm worried that I might not get something like that again. Certainly anytime soon. It's just like, yeah, it was class. It was a class experience.
Absolutely. It was a great game. Good atmosphere as well. I must admit, there are quite a few Irish fans in at Lord's that day, creating an atmosphere. But of course, we have to talk about the game. And day one, the one that I was there for out of all three, surprise, surprise, the worst one, for England, 85 all out. Tim Murta, 5 for 13. We've mentioned it so many times on the podcast. It's an absolute masterclass. Although, to this day, I still think the DRS was harsh on Chris Wokes. I still think that ball was not dipping at the end to conveniently hit middle stump. Okay, that's just my personal 2 cents on that. But then, of course, Mark, yourself, you got Joe Root out in that one. How big of an occasion was that for you to get England's captain out on that day?
Yeah, it was class. I was more disappointed in the fact I got had Jero absolutely stone dead Abu Dhabi and it was a no ball.
I remember that.
But I stand by it. If that didn't happen, then Mertz wouldn't have got a fiver. Oh, it's funny how it works, because obviously that was his last game for Ireland, wasn't it? And to end on such a great note for him, it was class. Like he asked me what end I wanted the ball. And by the time I started saying what end, he started laughing and walked away as if I had ever had a choice.
Did you get your preferred end?
Well, yes, but it was coincident. I never got to say anything because he knew there was not a chance that if I wanted a ball from the Tim Murta end, as I think it should be called, rather than the media centre end, it should be called the Tim Murta end. I don't think I would have been there ever been a chance. So it's funny, but he was some operator.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great player, absolute legend. Yeah. And I mean, for him to get those wickets in his last test at his home county ground, I don't know, it's just coincidental, but it's good, isn't it? It really was. It was a good end, certainly in that.
It's poetic.
Yeah. I guess you could say that. Yeah. But then I guess you have to talk about. We may as well just say Jack Leach's innings. Firstly, actually, Jason Roy's innings in the second innings for England was quality, by the way. I just like to put that out there. Yeah, that was quality. And I still think he should be given another chance in Test cricket, but that's another debate.
Mm-hmm.
But Jack Leach's innings, honestly, what was the thoughts in the Ireland camp then? Because let's be honest, nobody expected that from Leach when he opened up with Rory Burns. I don't even know if people expected him to last the night. But what
after 20 wickets in the day,
yeah, especially because he is effectively a number 11. But what was the thoughts in the Irish camp as he just kept getting run after run after run? And to be honest, it was a great innings. He plays,
some
he
didn't just shots.
Some lovely drives down the ground. He didn't just nick a few, get a bit lucky, get dropped a couple of times. You know, he played some lovely innings, although he did get dropped,
he did,
yeah,
a couple of times,
yeah.
He played some good shots, like he was. So the thing with Bond, like two technically sound tail enders, right? This is I think it's the most frustrating thing in the world, because the ones that are straight, they always middle, and the ones that are doing anything, they miss by enough. Like they miss by, they miss by half a foot. And then the minute you overpitch, because they're technically correct and because they're sound, they get onto you and they hit you for four, or if you're too straight, they'll flip you off the legs. Or he batted really well. He batted well all day. And I just think that, obviously, I think we put him down on 20 or something, and then we put him down on...
In the 80s, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know who dropped that. Tough chance, I reckon. Yeah, it was me at second slip. he played well. He's a good player. Like, he's tough, he's a tough old cookie, so fair play to him.
And it was a great innings, and of course, incredible test match that ended, in 38 all out. Chris Wokes 6 for 19. I mean, extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. Chris Wokes' record at Lords pretty much speaks for itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's outrageous at Lords, isn't he, Chris Wokes? He should play for Middlesex.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that as a Warwickshire fan. No, hopefully he'll stay at Warwickshire for the rest of his days. But of course, Mark, talking about Ireland then, what do you say are your aspirations with the Irish team heading into 2021? Of course, you've got a massive summer upcoming against South Africa. That's a really tantalising series. What are your future aspirations with the men in green?
Well, it's interesting. There's two T20 World Cups in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that's going to be a big focus for us. There's still 50 over World Cup in 2023, which we're trying to qualify for. Pretty much all the 50 other games we play now are in that sort of World Cup Super League thing.
The massive games,
So they mean a lot to us. If we can manage to somehow qualify through the top eight and qualify automatically, then it gives us a huge boost of confidence going into World Cup. I just think that's sort of like you've got three World Cups in 3 years. I don't think that's ever happened before. So like, there's plenty to be excited about. There's plenty to work on. There's plenty to sort of, we're still building a squad and trying to get more and more depth as the year go on, as the year goes on, sorry. So yeah, look, it's exciting for them. It's exciting for us. It's nice to be part of. And there's plenty of games to come up. Fingers crossed, COVID stays away.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and of course, yeah, from us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast, Mark, we wish you the very, very best of luck with the men in green. Get some wickets, get some runs as well. Get that average up for us two here at the Counter Cricket Podcast. Fingers crossed. And of course, yeah. Also, just one final thing before we go on to today's quickfire questions. Have you ruled out a return to county cricket, or is that something you're looking to do in the future per se?
Obviously, I would love to play county cricket again, but that would mean as an overseas right now. Yeah, who knows what's around the corner? It's definitely something I would listen to. But at the minute, I'm an Irish player and happy to stay that way.
Well, that's fair enough, of course.
Fair enough, yeah.
But I mean, I don't think we would be against that if you did return to the county circuit. It would be nice as an overseas player in the future. But to end today's podcast then, Mark, I say we go on to quickfire questions. Of course, a classic here at TCCP. Not quite teammates, but a classic nonetheless. So, Mark, are you ready for TCCP quickfire questions?
Let's go for it.
Right, question number one, test or T20?
Test.
Yeah, fair enough. Good answer. And if, right, okay, here's a question for you. If you could choose, excluding England, because that's already happened now, if you could choose one opponent for Ireland's next test, like dream opponent, who would it be? Which nation?
Zimbabwe, probably, because I reckon we've got the better end.
Fair enough. The next one, this is a tough one, because we've talked about these two grounds a lot today, and that is Edgbaston or Lords.
What's the format? If it's a test match, Lords, if it's white ball, Edgbaston.
Fair enough. Okay, we'll go with that.
Very hard question. Yeah, diplomatic, to say the least there, Mark. Next one, as a bowler, clean bowled or LBW?
LBW.
Fair enough. I was thinking LBW is most satisfying.
Oh, absolutely.
On a review as well. So satisfying. to get an umpire's decision overturned. That's very satisfying to me. The next one, which should you prefer, a cover drive or a reverse sweep? Which do you prefer to play?
Cover drive.
Good answer. Good.
Yes, tradition.
Exactly. Nothing beats a good cover drive. 100%. Next one, again, very bowling orientated, this one. Take a fiver in a final, but lose the final itself, or take zero wickets and win?
A win, especially in a final. No one cares if you take a fiver and lose. I've said this before, I would rather never take a wicket for the rest of my life and win every game I play.
Oh, good attitude.
Yeah, very good.
No, but like, there's nothing like, yeah, winning's just the best thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without a doubt, yeah. Again, another bowling orientated one. Would you rather, or which do you prefer to take, but it can't be both, a hat-trick or a fifer?
Fifer.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. More wickets at the end of the day. Two more wickets.
Yeah, but true. A hat-trick is special, though. Hat-trick is special.
Peter Siddle, hat-trick on his birthday. We all remember that, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah, never forget that.
Unfortunately, as an England fan. Moving on to the next one, Mark. This is a ridiculously tough one. Sir Vivian Richards or Brian Charles Lara?
Brian Lara.
Good answer, yes. All the Warwickshire fans listening will obviously be agreeing with that one.
He was class.
Absolutely, yeah. Seventh leading run scorer of all time, Brian Lara. Just an interesting fact in Test cricket.
The next one. Would you rather score the fastest T20 50 for Ireland in their history, or hit six sixes for Ireland in a T20 game?
Oh, probably six sixes, I reckon.
To Kieran Pollard.
Yeah.
Which is mad, by the way.
That's pretty flair. Like, there's no, I think there's only, what is it? Herschel Gibbs, UV, and Kieran Pollard, six sixes.
And Jordan Clark has also done it in a second 11 match for Lancs, by the way. Just nobody talks about that, but yeah.
Fair enough. Right, moving on to our penultimate one then, Mark. This is a difficult one. As a former Warwickshire player, Ian Bell or Jonathan Trott?
Jonathan Trott.
Trotty, fair play.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
I play a bit of wars on the trolley, so hopefully he's fine.
Okay.
He won't chat to me.
Fair enough.
What a player. Love Trotty.
Yeah, absolute Trotty. Legend. Absolute legend. And the final one, then, moving totally away from cricket here, I'll be honest. Would you rather be half your height or double your weight?
Half my height or double my weight? I don't think I can afford to be either. I'd probably have, if my at my weight right now, if I was half my height, it would be horrendous. So I'm going to have to say double my weight.
Fair enough. Oh, I mean, that, yeah, I think everyone has gone with that so far.
Yeah, every I don't think we've had one half your height. I think the only Those person boys. Who may choose half your height is Boyd Rankin.
Or Stuart Broad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Mohammed Irfan, if he ever plays county cricket, 7'1". He could one day. But yeah, I think that's pretty much a good place to wrap up today's quickfire questions round and the podcast as a whole. But Mark, before we actually end today's episode of the Counts Cricket podcast, do you have any social media channels to promote? Any Twitter, Instagram profiles, for example?
Nothing to promote, but yeah, on Instagram and Twitter.
Fair enough. Well, obviously, Mark, from us two here at the Counts Cricket podcast, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure, of course, talking all things Warwickshire and Irish cricket. And we've said it before, wish you the very best of luck heading into 2021 and, of course, beyond that. But that does bring us to an end to what's been a fantastic episode of the Counts Cricket podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.